If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back, Howard Beck. It is finals week. Maybe next week we do the pod in person. Maybe in like my kitchen in Boston. What are your thoughts? Do you want to make the trip to Casa Mannix and record a live podcast in my kitchen?
I thought we'd already established that your place was off limits to all of the rest of the SI staff. You didn't want anything to do with us. You don't want us in your home. But listen, if you want to host a podcast, maybe bring out a nice spread for lunch or whatever, make it a party. Like I think it's a fantastic idea. Lobster rolls?
I could
rolls?
Do that. I could.
Can you do lobster rolls?
Definitely. There's a place that right down the street from me, best lobster roll you've ever had. We'll do that. It's called Tony's. I don't know why Tony's has the best lobster roll ever, but it does. So
done.
We'll go down there, have a lobster roll, come back, record a podcast, make it all happen. I like that.
Awesome.
Because we do have the Celtics, Howard, in the finals. Celtics Warriors starts on Thursday, NBA Finals. I want to get into the layers in that series, but let's talk briefly about the future of the Heat. Miami, yeah, that was as close a series as you could possibly get. Jimmy Butler makes that three-point shot, and I would argue the Heat were going to win that game. Boston was not coming down the other end and scoring in that moment. Let me start there. You have a problem with Jimmy Butler's shot to end Game 7?
No, I know this is like the hot take item of the week. In absence of anything more, everybody must have an opinion on whether Jimmy should have driven past or into Al Horford as opposed to pulling up for three. I really don't have a strong feeling on this. I know that's like a total sin for anybody in podcasting or talk radio or anywhere else. We have to have an opinion. I don't. Like, we don't know what would have happened if he'd kept driving. We don't know if he converts. We don't know if he gets fouled. We don't know if it's a three-point play. We don't know if he misses. Who knows? We don't know what if he had anything left in his legs at that point after playing every second of the game. The three, given the way Jimmy was shooting in that series, is justifiable. Overall, for Jimmy Butler's career, he's not the pull-up in transition three guy, right? But in the context of that series, he was shooting pretty well. I think he had just hit one not that far before that. It's fine. And if he makes it, we're all talking about Jimmy Butler's a stud. He's a hero. He's clutch. And Jimmy does have, by the way, a history of being clutch, too, and making big shots and making big plays at big moments. So he earned that. He earned the right to shoot it and miss it. I have no problem either way. It's fine. It's unfortunate for the Heat that he missed it, and maybe he didn't have the legs left, and maybe that's a reason to keep driving, but you need legs to drive, too. So we could talk ourselves into circles. I just have.
Zero problem with that shot, Howard. Zero problem with that shot. Jimmy Butler was the driving force behind that comeback. If Jimmy Butler wanted to pull up from half court in that moment, he would have had the right to do it. The Heat would have been dead in the water after Game 5 if not for Jimmy Butler. And he had played every second of that game up until that point. And I think it's pretty clear that his legs had left him there. I mean, he was... that shot came up short, and I have no problem with him taking it. I mean, Al Horford was way off him. Like, Al Horford, you know, I know he said after the game, I was loaded up, I contested. Not really. Like, you know, he was there preventing the drive. And Butler was open. He took the shot. He missed it. That's the way it goes sometimes, but Jimmy Butler should have taken that shot. Future of the Heat. Like, Miami, you know, their core pieces are going to be back. Butler's going to be back. Kyle Lowry's going to be back. Presumably, Tyler Hero is going to be back. Duncan Robinson didn't play a lot in this series, but he's under contract long term. How do you feel about Miami's chances of getting back to this point next year?
They've got a chance. And listen, if you're in a Game 7 and you're within literally seconds, literally a few points from making the finals, then I think we have to say the proof is already there. They can do this again, as is. But, and well, actually, I should add one more aspect to that. Jimmy Butler was hurt. Kyle Lowry was hurt. Tyler Hero was hurt. I know the Celtics had their injuries too, so this is not about that. But the Heat can certainly make the case to themselves that if we are closer to healthy, no one's 100% this time of year, yada, yada. If they are at least a little closer to healthy, especially among those three key guys, maybe they're in the finals and we're not having any discussion at all about do they need to make tweaks? What do they need to do in the offseason? But they did lose. Those guys did get hurt. And in part, it's because of the miles on Lowry and Jimmy Butler, especially Lowry. You know, Tyler Hero's young, stuff just happens. But I do think they have legit concerns, and not so much with who they have, but who they have relative to who the rest of the Eastern Conference has, right? The Bucks will be back next season with a presumably healthy Chris Middleton, and they'll be right back in the mix. The Celtics aren't going anywhere. The Sixers, you know that Daryl Morey will figure out something this offseason to bolster their chances, and assuming that James Harden is still there, which we have no reason to think otherwise, a full season and a training camp with him in the fold playing with Embiid, the Sixers should be just better. The Nets might actually get their shit together and obviously have all the talent in the world to be a top four team in the East. There are too many top four teams in the East for the four spots that actually constitute the top four teams in the standings. So there's no guarantees for the Heat, even though they could be in the finals right now. And so I look at them and I think Jimmy Butler either needs a really reliable, true co-star. And that's not to diminish Adebayo, but he's not your typical co-star, right? It's like Draymond Green. Great player, all-timer, Hall of Famer. But Draymond Green's not the other guy that you say in a pinch or if I'm tired, like you go run the offense for a while and drop 20, 25 points tonight. Adebayo's not that guy either. Kyle Lowry's not that guy at this stage of his career. I don't think Tyler Hero necessarily is going to profile as that in his career. Victor Oladipo, nice reclamation project, but he's not going to go back to being Pacers Oladipo while he's there, assuming that he stays. They need more. They just need more firepower to contend with the best teams in the East. And Jimmy's only getting older. He has this tremendous ability to manufacture 35, 40, 45 points in these playoff games, but it's not who he is most of the season. I just think ideally Jimmy is like Scottie Pippen to somebody else's Michael Jordan, or you need a couple of other Jimmy Butler level or just below that guys to get through. I just don't think there's enough offensive dynamism there, shot creation and shot making, for the Heat to contend with the East when the East is at full strength. And look, the East is often, or the NBA in general is not often at full strength, right? You just need enough to be able to get through. but they are not the team compared to all those others that I listed that you say, well, they've got the talent to beat the rest of them on paper. No, they've got the talent to beat them if a few things break their way and if they stay healthy. I don't know that they have enough. And look, we know Pat Riley never rests. We know that Riley and Andy Ellisberg, the GM of the Heat, are as creative and as aggressive as it gets. I think they will be really aggressive this summer, even without cap room, even with tax issues. You know, if Bradley Beal comes available and there's a sign and trade possibility, Zach LaVine, heck, I wouldn't even rule out, call me crazy, I wouldn't even rule out maybe prying loose Ben Simmons if the Nets decide we can't afford, as I have contended, to have two insanely volatile co-stars next to Durant. If maybe they, you know, I don't know if it's Kyrie or Ben Simmons. I think one or the other should go. Whether the Nets agree with me is immaterial for this conversation. But if anybody becomes available at that level, I think the Heat will try.
Yeah, they will try. And even if they don't make a significant move, they can be every bit as good as they were this year. I mean, natural progression of a guy like Tyler Hero, Max Strus, who really came on in the second half of the season and in the playoffs, is only going to get better. So they can be as good a team as they were this year. But to your point, the East is just tough. Like, it's going to be tough for the foreseeable future. I mean, Milwaukee's got a multi-year window. Boston's got a multi-year window. The Nets, volatile, but on paper, they should be dangerous. Philadelphia, full season with all the teams you mentioned. Like, this, you know, Miami could be every bit as good as they were this year, but they could be the sixth seed. Like, that's just the way it shakes out in the Eastern Conference. So,
yeah.
I'm with you on that.
And we've got teams getting better. Like, the Raptors had a breakthrough season, and we know that that team's going to be aggressive. The Bulls, we'll see if Zach LaVine stays and where they take it from here. The
Cleveland.
Hawks.
Look at Cleveland.
The Hawks, the Cavs, maybe even the Hornets. Like, there's...
Miami had a favorable schedule in the playoffs, too. I mean, they beat who they had to beat. They beat the teams in front of them, but they got Atlanta in that first round, and they got, you know, a banged-up Sixers team in the second round without Joel Embiid for the first couple of games. So, you know, will they be as good next year in the playoffs? I don't know. Against a healthy team, I don't know. That's a problem. All right, let's move on to the finals and talk about Celtics against Warriors. Before we talk about kind of the tangibles, I want to get your take on how significant the intangibles are in this series. And the intangibles to me are the health of the Celtics, because Marcus Smart, clearly not close to 100%. Robert Williams in that game 7 was quite literally dragging that leg up and down the floor. Like, he could not do Robert Williams-like things. That's why it absolutely killed the Celtics' chances, or at least their odds going into the series, not finishing the conference finals in game 6. If they had finished the conference finals in game 6, you would have had almost a week to rest Robert Williams and Marcus Smart. Instead, they flew back to Boston on Sunday night. They got in like 4 a.m. They're traveling on Tuesday. There's just not a lot of time to really dig into the rest and recovery that team needs. So that's a massive factor in my mind in this series. The other factor is experience. The Warriors, like, every one of their key guys has at least one trip to the NBA Finals. Most of their key guys have, what, 4 now trips to the finals with that group? Like, it's, or 5, right? This will be the 5th trip for...
This will be the 6th. This will be the 6th. Yeah, the 6th for the core 3 guys.
That's right. With
they've been there so much, we can't keep count.
We've lost count. Whereas on the other side of the ledger, nobody from the Celtics has been there. Like, it's, they are the definition of inexperienced. And, you know, before you dismiss that as not you personally, but people listening might dismiss that as a non-factor. I remember 2012 when the Oklahoma City Thunder might have had a better team than Miami in that series. Kevin Durant, he was still young, but he was great. Russell Westbrook, great. James Harden, 6th man, great. Serge Ibaka, great. I mean, they had role players. They had everything to win a championship that year. And if you ask players from that team, and I've had this conversation with Kendrick Perkins, they were overwhelmed by the moment into a degree. So I wonder if the Celtics on that stage, if that's going to be something that hurts them. What do you think about the intangibles in this series before we get into the tangible stuff?
Yeah, no, I think all that stuff is absolutely relevant. It's not always indicative of the results, but it's not nothing. It matters that Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson have three championships and five finals apiece. That Kevon Looney has finals experience as well. Iguodala, we'll see if he's healthy enough to play in this series, but you know, there's another proven hand from their 5-year run who's in the mix. And that's a really nice foundation that you have these young guys around, right? Like, they need Jordan Poole. If Gary Payton II can play in this series, it's a huge boost for them. But Jordan Poole, Gary Payton II, Andrew Wiggins, Otto Porter Jr., it's new to all these guys, right? Like, we think about the Warriors, okay, 6 finals in 8 years, they've got this down pat. Well, yeah, 3 of them do, 4 of them counting Iguodala, and a little bit of Looney, you know, when they were in their, you know, for their last run. But there's a lot of guys in this rotation who have not been there either. And that matters too. But it certainly helps when you can rely on the guys who have been there. And then you've got a coaching staff, of course, that has all the experience in the world at doing this. And how much does that affect the Celtics psychologically, the stage, the chaos of it, all of us in the media? It won't be as big as it was in 2019, right? We are, this is not the bubble. This is not last year where it was still very limited media contingent in 2021. We're not going to be all the way back to 2019 levels in terms of the volume of media, but it's going to be as close as it's been in a while. And all of that, it contributes to the atmosphere. I think it contributes to the tension and the spotlight that you feel on you. And you feel it anyway, just because the level of competition is what it is. And that every game has these incredible stakes attached to it. And we've seen Tatum and Brown have these amazing games. We've also seen them kind of sputter at times in this postseason when things got tight. So, that's the intangibles matter. You raised all the right ones, and I think they do matter. It is the reason that when we're asked to, as we just were before we got on this call, to put in our predictions, I lean Warriors prediction, but not with... It's not a lot. If I'm favoring them, it's by, an inch.
Yeah, I agree. If the Celtics are healthy and if they're not completely overwhelmed by the moment, they should win the series. They should. I mean, I was at the two games that the Celtics, I was part of the broadcast for one and at the other. I was in December when the Celtics were bottoming out, where they were awful. Warriors only won by 4 in Boston. In March, when the Celtics were peaking, they clobbered Golden State by, 20 in that game. And it really wasn't even that close. I understand in that game, Steph Curry went out when Marcus Smart kind of dove on the floor, caught him, and that led to the foot injury that
plagued
him. Yeah, there was that. But he went out in that game. But look, the Celtics were winning before that. Like, that wasn't the difference in that game. Like, the Celtics' defense is a nightmare for Golden State, because the way the Warriors play offensively, they move right all the time. They're creating mismatches, switches, things like that. They're trying to confuse teams defensively. The Celtics don't get confused, Howard. Like, they switch everything and they're comfortable. If Marcus Smart gets switched onto Jordan Poole, they're fine. If Al Horford winds up on Steph Curry, they're okay with that. Like, their ability to change things up 1 through 5, I think, is going to be a huge factor in this series, because what Golden State has done in previous rounds to, most recently to Memphis and to others, they're not going to be able to do that against Boston. Like, the Celtics are a different brand of defense than the Grizzlies and everybody else that Golden State has played along the way. I'm very curious to see how that plays out, because as explosive as Golden State is offensively, defensively, the Celtics are a nightmare. Like, they are a monster out there on that end. And I'm wondering how Steve Kerr kind of tweaks his offense to adjust to that. Because that game in March, Howard, that was a beating. That was a flogging that the Celtics put on them. And that's something I'm sure that's going to be fresh in the minds of those Celtics players going into this series.
I'm sure, and I don't dismiss it as being at least relevant for purposes of discussion, for purposes of game planning, for purposes of the Warriors' thought process. But I would also say that most of the time, and especially when we're talking about East-West, when there's only a 2-game sample size from the regular season's relationship to the postseason, I don't think is that persuasive. And especially in the case of this Warriors season, where they spent the first 2.5 months without Klay Thompson. Then Klay comes back, but he's not all the way back really physically and conditioning wise. And it takes him the entire season and still to this day, getting back to the old Clay. Clay comes back and Draymond goes out. Draymond comes back and Steph Curry goes out. Like, their entire season has been kind of choppy, and they had a pretty strong record despite it all. But I don't think we've really seen the true version of the Warriors until the postseason, where Clay's had that much time to get right, where Curry and Draymond Green have gotten healthy. They've had their full contingent for the most part, minus Gary Payton for the last few weeks. So I don't know that we should put too much stock in what happened in the regular season. The rest of what you said, I absolutely agree with, of course. They are a big, physical, versatile, switchable defense that is going to cause the Warriors all kinds of problems. Kind of like, honestly, what the Rockets did to them back in 2018 when the Rockets took them 7 in the conference finals. They were very switchable, switched everything all the time, and made it really difficult for the Warriors. And the Warriors had Kevin Durant at that point as, you know, their ultimate outlet, right? Like, he, you know, if all else fails, Durant can manufacture out of thin air. You don't really have that element now. Steph can manufacture little. Jordan Poole can manufacture little. But you don't, you know, there's no replacing, literally, Kevin Durant. And so I do think they're going to have a tougher time in that regard. I think both ends of the court, and this is not, I think, even remotely a stretch or hyperbolic. Both ends of the court, the Celtics are going to pose the biggest challenge the Warriors have seen in this postseason. Because the Mavericks, really nice season, but they're not a complete team. Luka doesn't have a co-star. They're really young. They just don't have the personnel. The Grizzlies, young, not quite complete. The Nuggets in the first round, certainly not complete without two key players. This is the most complete team the Warriors will have faced. This is the best team offensively and defensively they will have faced in this postseason, which is as it should be. It's not always that way, but it should get harder as you go. It should be the hardest in the finals. It will be this time for the Warriors. And I think this will be the truest test we'll see of whether this version of the Warriors is truly as stout as the versions that won championships, you know, not so long ago. It's a different team now. And I think the Celtics are going to push them to the limits.
I do too. The most important person in this series, in my mind, is Marcus Smart. Because if the Celtics had lost Game 7, like, what would the conversation be right now, Howard? It would be like, what was Marcus Smart doing? Like, what was he, how many three-pointers is he going to take and miss and put the Celtics in a position to lose? He was not great offensively in Game 6, 1-for-9 from 3, and then down the stretch, he was just missing everything. You know, to his credit, stuck with it, made 2 free throws that iced the game for Boston, but, you know, his ability to be efficient offensively is huge for what they do. And defensively, look, he's the defensive player of the year. This is the series you need him to play like it, because whether it's Steph Curry or Klay Thompson or somebody else, he is going to be faced with an all-NBA level matchup. Like, he is going to have a great offensive player in front of him, just like he did in that first round or the last round against with Jimmy Butler. But even on switches, whatever, he's going to wind up with a great offensive player, and he's going to have to dig deep and play great defense. I know he's banged up. He's got the quad injury, the foot injury, every injury in the book right now in his lower body. But he's going to have to play huge in this series for Boston to win. I just he, to me, is the most important player. Efficient offense, great defense, and the Celtics win this series. Also, stop turning the ball over. That's been Boston's Achilles heel throughout this postseason. But Marcus Smart, to me, he's the biggest key of it all.
You say turnovers? You think Celtics, the turnovers, their Achilles heel? Have you seen the Warriors?
Yeah, well, not as much as I've watched Boston. I mean, I was doing Eastern Conference stuff.
No. I'm kidding. If anybody's, if we're going to turn this into a turnover contest, you know, the Warriors are going to lose the series.
Oh,
because
don't test the Celtics in that. Don't test the Celtics in that. Don't.
The Warriors love throwing the ball away.
Against Miami.
The Warriors love throwing the ball.
Take it.
There, I mean, listen, that it's going to be interesting to watch that on both ends because of that, because that has been the Warriors' Achilles heel for years. Going back to the beginning of the Steve Kerr era as coach, because the Warriors, because they rely on the pass a lot to get open shots, right? They pass more than almost any team in the first place. I haven't looked that up statistically. I'm sure it's the case. They pass a lot. That's how they create offense. They also tend to get a little bit too adventurous, Steph Curry in particular, but others as well, with their passes. And that can lead to turnovers and runouts and easy baskets for the opposition. So maybe this is going to come down to which team is a little bit more judicious with their passing and keeping the turnover count down. I think it, you know, the part of it we're not going to talk about as much because we rightfully have and rightfully will talk about the Celtics defense. The Warriors have been throughout their dynastic run over the last, you know, 8 years minus the two gap years. They've been a great defense. They don't profile as it. You don't look at them and just see monstrous defensive players across the court. But as a unit, we know what Draymond Green can do, and that makes a lot of it possible. And Klay isn't the old Klay, but this team is still a really good defensive team. And if Gary Payton II gets back into the rotation, that's a key piece. How are the Celtics going to deal with the Warriors' defense? I mean, we don't look at it that way because we have this caricature of the Warriors as the finesse team, the three-point shooting team, the pretty team. The team
they are that, not. That, they are not.
Not yeah, defensively.
You're right. They are not.
They bust their asses. And there's, you know, this is mentioned in a story that I have running on Wednesday that about Steph Curry that he just had probably his best defensive season. He's actually come a long way. He's not some easy mark defensively. He works. And so I do think that there's an onus on the Celtics as well, on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, as there always has been. Generate offense for themselves. Generate offense for their teammates. Make the smart passes when they're doubled. And deal with the defensive pressure that the Warriors are going to apply, because it will be there. And so we do have to, you know, the inverse is also true here. The Celtics have to deal with the Warriors' defense.
All right, you mentioned Steph Curry. You know, look, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, multi-time MVP. You know, there's no denying his greatness. But if Golden State beats Boston, what does that do in your mind for Steph Curry? Like, does that elevate him into a different basketball stratosphere?
My default usually on these issues, on these questions, is the guy is who he is, right? Like, Steph Curry, if he retired yesterday, has already an all-time great, right? Back-to-back MVP, first ever unanimous MVP, changed the game, as we know. And as Draymond Green refers to him in the story that I have tomorrow, he's an anomaly. There's nobody we've ever seen like Steph Curry in the history of the game. And he has, as much as LeBron, I think, has defined this era, and in some ways more so because of the way Steph and his style of play and his three-point shooting changed the game. So, like, does he need a fourth championship ring to elevate him? I think because we do have this kind of count the rings discussion, and we do tend to create our pantheons and pyramids and rankings with all the honors in mind, the more of those things you stack up, the more difficult it is to keep you out of the top part of the club, right? Like, he's already in there. I would argue, as of today, without this championship, just even by getting them to a sixth final in 8 years, if we're going to say that each piece matters and that stack of honors and achievements matters, I think just getting them back to this point, Chris, without Kevin Durant, without any superstar next to him, all respect to Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, but like, they're not the Kevin Durant or LeBron James type. What Steph Curry has done to get them back to the finals after all they've been through is an achievement unto itself. And I think secures in my mind the fact that we should be talking about him not in, you know, the GOAT discussion's its own thing. Jordan, LeBron, Kareem, whatever. But when we talk about Magic and Bird, Oscar, Jerry West, Shaq, Kobe, Duncan, Akeem, whoever else is in that you know, that mixing bowl, that group that is behind the GOATs, but that we always, you know, we don't know exactly how to order them. Steph's in that group to me. I think he's already there. And I think if they win this championship, that's a fourth ring. That will tie him with Shaq and LeBron. I think to me that would absolutely secure it. And presumably this time he would get finals MVP, one piece of his resume that's missing. I don't think that should matter, by the way, that he doesn't have it. And I don't think the two championships next to Durant are somehow diminished because they had Durant. Like, Durant's never there if Steph's not there in the first place. And Steph Curry was like point for point with Durant in terms of their scoring load and their responsibility during that time. Yeah, Durant was finals MVP those two seasons. I don't think that matters to Curry's legacy. So to me, Chris, he's already there. Whatever you want the pantheon to be, again, the GOAT's its own discussion. That next group of everybody after the GOAT discussion, he's in that group.
I would say, to me, this would be the biggest championship that Steph has ever won. You go back to 2015, younger team, but loaded, obviously. The two championships with Durant, look, you don't say no to Kevin Durant, adding him to your team, but that team was as loaded as they get. And look, they don't win a series against Cleveland without all the players there, but Kevin Durant was the driving force in those finals wins over Cleveland. So I think for this series, or for this accomplishment, would be his most impressive, because this has not been an easy season for Steph Curry or the Warriors. You know, you start the season out, Steph looks like the MVP, and then Draymond gets hurt, and you start integrating Klay back into the mix, and you've got a whole bench full of really young players. I mean, as Moody and Kuminga, what, they're both 19, right? Like, you got two teenagers sitting there on the bench. You're weaving Jordan Poole in, who is a bit of a surprise for this team in a good way. Then you get into the playoffs. You're not the number one seed. You're not the number two seed. You've got to, you know, step up and win big games on the road. You know, this would be his most impressive achievement. Now, I don't know what that does for him. Like, does it elevate him from top 15 to top 10, top 10 to top 8? I don't know the answer to that question. It's very subjective, and I haven't really given it the kind of thought you really need to give it to have that kind of debate. But, if nothing else, the most impressive championship of Steph Curry's career would be this one, because of the circumstances, because of his team, and because of the team he's playing. You know, it's going to be a nightmare for him defensively, trying to put up the kind of points he's used to putting up. So that to me is kind of, quote, on the line for Steph Curry in this series.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the two championships you would compare would be the first one and this one if they got this one, right?
Yeah.
Because 2015, we didn't see it coming. Nobody expected the Warriors to win the championship that year, or even to make the finals, frankly. They were young. They were a three-point shooting team, a jump shooting team, whatever, dismissed by Charles Barkley and a lot of old heads who felt like you can't win that way. And
what is Barkley's beef with your town? You love San Francisco, Howard. What is Barkley's beef with them people, man? He's out of his mind.
Dude, I don't know. It's a little disturbing because I love Chuck. And as you know, I love San Francisco, and I'm a Bay Area guy by birth. So it's a little troubling. It's a little troubling. We got to figure out. Maybe we need a summit or something. I'll moderate. But I think that first championship, we shouldn't just dismiss out of hand, though, because it was an achievement. That team broke through with a style that we really hadn't seen, and with a group that was still young and I think underrated in their time. You know, that championship was an absolute revelation, an absolute surprise. And so this one, you know, you're right. I mean, look, they had to rebuild themselves. They've got all these young guys along for the ride. The core group is now older, so getting back is that much harder. We didn't see this one necessarily coming either. You couldn't have confidently predicted this at the start of the season, given everything they were going through and no Klay at the start. But this one's a surprise too. It's a different kind of surprise, though. And when it finally happens, you go, okay, yeah, I can see that, because Steph and Klay and Draymond have done this before. Right. But 2015 was an absolute eye-opener. And, you know, also when we're talking about Steph's legacy, like, let's not forget, I know they blew the 3-1 lead. Hashtag blown 3-1 lead. They won 73 games that season. We don't even talk about it anymore. They won 73 freaking games. And, you know, if you want to invoke the Chicago Bulls old mantra, which was, it don't mean a thing without the ring, when they went 72-10. All right, I get it. The Warriors blew the 3-1 lead. Draymond got suspended. The Cavs win. LeBron wins. But they were in game 7 of the finals and won 73 games. And that was before Kevin Durant. So, I mean, there's a lot of feathers in Steph's cap, a lot of lines on his resume, a lot of trophies in his cabinet, yada, yada, yada. Like, there's plenty there. And I'm with you. I don't know how to order all these guys when we talk at top 10, 15, 20. I admire the people who can actually assertively, confidently rank them and give them numbers. I can't do it. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. I just know that there is this kind of swirling group of guys who comes somewhere after the GOAT discussion, and whatever that group is, how many ever it is, and however you want to order them, Steph's in that group. And I'm confident in saying.
Agreed. All right, let's finish with this, Howard. You gave it away. You said you're leaning towards Golden State. Give me an official prediction for this series.
I really think it's a coin flip, and I'm leaning Warriors only for two reasons, experience and home court advantage. So I think that it equals Warriors in seven, even though I am officially obligated as a veteran NBA reporter to say I would like the series to be shorter than that, because frankly, I like shorter series. But yes. Warriors in seven is my gut.
All right, I'm going the other way. Celtics in six.
Six?
Six. I think they finish it on their home floor.
I think you're disrespecting the Warriors.
How dare I? I know. The aggregators will be all over. Mannix picks Celtics in six. Shows disrespect towards Draymond, Steph, and Clay. Look, I'm just, one thing, top of this podcast, I talked about the health, and that's a big part of all this. But I do think there's, and if they had won that series against Miami in six, I would have been extremely confident picking the Celtics to win this series. But I think there's enough time that's passed, plus game one and game two being so spaced out, Thursday game one, Sunday game two, that's enough time for them to get right. Not well, but to get right. And I just keep flashing back to that March game. And I know it's just one game, and it's the regular season, but watching the Celtics switch everything on that defense and watching them just create nightmare matchup after nightmare matchup, I just think defense is going to carry the day. And look, home court advantage is big, but what were the Celtics in this series, or in this playoffs on the road? Like, they were great on the road. They won two games in Milwaukee.
The Warriors haven't lost in game seven
in Miami.
The Warriors haven't had a series where they haven't won a road game in like 8 years. They've won at least one road game in every single series. So they both have that capability, right? Which is why this thing should go the distance, and you're disrespecting the Warriors to say six.
I'm disrespecting the Warriors. There's no question about it. I will be begging for forgiveness after Game 7 when Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and all those guys are celebrating, I'm sure. But I think this is the Celtics' year. It's one of those weird years. I love what Ime Udoka continues to do. Their toughness emanates from him. Their mental toughness, it begins with him. He has instilled in something in them that they didn't have in previous years. It's not a knock on Brad Stevens, of course, but you know, Ime Udoka has brought a mentality that they haven't had in years past. Like, they'll have that going into the series. They won't be overwhelmed by the moment, and they win this series in six games. That's my official prediction, Beck. So we'll save this audio for a later day.
No, look,
are you going to take me to the...
Good. You could absolutely go that way. Where am I taking you?
Are you taking me to the Full House this weekend? Can we go knock on Danny Tanner's door?
I have never in my life seen an episode of Full House. I've seen a few episodes of Charmed on TNT, which I believe was also in San Francisco.
Oh, can we go to the Charmed House?
I don't know where that is, but we could find it. You know what else? The Real World House from The Real World San Francisco, which I think was season three of The Real World, back when The Real World was actually interesting.
You think it was season three. Okay, yeah, you think it was season three. You know exactly what it was.
I think it was three. Yeah, no, New York, L.A., San Francisco. Yeah, three.
There you go. There you go. You know, I tried out for The Real World four times.
Did you? Why does this not surprise me?
No, didn't take me. That was back when we were sending like videotapes in. Like, I was doing my best to get their attention, and nothing really worked.
What years was this? Where would you have gone if you had actually been accepted?
I don't know. I don't remember. Maybe Seattle was one of them, I think. I don't know.
I would have loved to have seen you would have just been fighting people over time in the bathroom. There would have been fights over hair product. You know, Mannix, you're taking up too much shelf space with all these gels and mousses and creams.
The MTV producers, opportunity missed. I would have been a great cast member. I would have crushed that. I mean, you want somebody that just drinks all day and cares about their hair? That's me. that's me. So
that about sums up The Real World. You would have been phenomenal.
All right, Beck, we will see you in San Francisco. We'll do in person in Boston this podcast next week.
See you there soon, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.